You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. If you got to go out over the weekend, maybe for brunch, you might not have seen the long lines that you're used to.
Hello, guys. I'm going to catch your hummus today.
At the Sunset Triangle Plaza in Silver Lake, Jared Kosiak works as a server at a place called Sawyer, a hip brunch spot on Sunset Boulevard where the new coronavirus kept crowds, let's just say, small.
Normally we'd at least have a couple people in, but right now no one has walked in except for you, which got us excited. Yeah, no one's walked in. Last night I worked and we had I had six tables before they sent me home at 8 o'clock, which is crazy.
And now, since midnight last night, restaurant meals, a drink at a bar, a coffee shop hangout is no longer an option. The mayor of L.A., Eric Garcetti, during a public address last night, announced they're closed, except for takeout. And he outlined just how the city would function for the rest of this month.
Groceries, pharmacies, and food banks are, of course, exempt from this order of closure. Movie theaters, though, performance venues, bowling alleys, arcades, gyms, and fitness centers will be closed to the public. And we're urging houses of worship to limit gatherings on their premises.
So far, there are dozens of reported cases of COVID-19 in L.A. County. And in an attempt to keep that number as low as possible for as long as possible, we're all staying away from public places and staying away from one another until at least the end of March. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb has been reporting on how this first weekend of social distancing is affecting businesses across Southern California. He joins me now in the studio, 6 feet apart, of course.
Definitely, Steve.
Hi,
how
Benjamin.
You doing?
All right. Well, you spent the weekend reporting in Northeast LA. What was the mood among folks working and shopping there?
Well, the mood was definitely anxious, and the shopping, let's face it, it was bare. I mean, I started by heading over to the farmer's market in Silver Lake, and there I spoke with a number of shoppers. Among them was Haley Magrini. She was buying some fresh produce with her partner, and they both told me they weren't really feeling worried about getting sick, but the shutdown in travel is really starting to hurt them.
We run Airbnbs at our house, and so we really depend on that income, and everyone's canceled on us, so I am feeling a pretty high level of anxiety just because that's our income.
And when I arrived at the market, it was kind of the late morning. Things were rather quiet, but I asked Nick Long what the place looked like when they opened up. He was selling some microgreens under a tent in the light rain.
Surprisingly, right when I got here, probably around 7:30 a.m. to set up, it was jam-packed. And, you know, everything from the farmers over there with the lettuce, apples, berries, people came here because there's nothing at the stores. And this is their only option, is to come here. And I'm sure that they thought that the farmers markets were going to run out of produce and items, so they came here right when it opened. It was insane.
I mean, insane, you know, the grocery stores, I mean, empty shelves, empty streets, empty businesses. Do you think, Benjamin, that's what LA is going to look like for the foreseeable future?
I mean, yeah, something like that. I should point out the situation is very fluid. We have things that are changing by the hour, sometimes by the minutes. But if you've braved the supermarket, you've likely been met in some cases with a very unusual scene. I mean, I live in walking distance to the Glendale Targets, and I went there last night with my wife to pick up a few things, and we saw entire shelves that were raided. I mean, empty medicine racks, rows and rows of cleaning supplies and paper goods, completely wiped out. Also, some very anxious shoppers pawing through the store with makeshift masks and bandanas covering their faces. Isabel Sanchez says she already went shopping for the supplies that she and her family need. She told me she's already gone shopping because she wants to make sure they have what they need if they do get quarantined. And she explained to me that some, not all, but some of the rushes we're seeing at the supermarkets are because of this, right? People worry they might get quarantined. Now, a few miles away in Silver Lake at the Army Surplus Store, they had seen a rush on goods too. At least that's what Raul Guerra told me. He's the cashier there.
Mostly, you know, MREs, dry food, water, containers, you know, people are trying to get prepared for something. Maybe they think that the city is going to be shut down, you know, like closed, you know, for all the coronavirus that is happening.
You heard Guerra there say MREs. Those are the ready-to-eat meals that are bought by the U.S. Defense Department for soldiers in the field. And that behavior, it's consistent with some of the other things that we saw this weekend, right? There was a line at gun stores, especially in Culver City, wrapping around the block.
Oh, yeah.
People are hungry to do something. There's certainly anxiety, and it's obvious in many forms of our society right
now. There certainly is some anxiety. Bars and restaurants, these are jobs, though, Benjamin, that rely on tips. We heard from the waiter earlier, the server at Sawyer. I would imagine the folks who work in those industries are really going to feel the pinch.
Yeah, Steve, they already are. I mean, I asked that server, Jared Kosiak, at Sawyer in Silver Lake, and here's what he told me.
I know a lot of people are freaking out. I'm not going to be making much money until all this, whatever happens. But I mean, you know, there are bigger problems than that, I guess. But yeah, personally, I'm not going to be making much money.
Kosiak did tell me he has some secondary income, but he does empathize with those who rely exclusively on the service industry. I mean, especially what's happening with the mayor ordering these eateries to shut down their dining areas for at least the next couple weeks. And then you got to think about the secondary effects, right? I mean, closed restaurants don't just mean idle waiters. In the case of someone like Nick Long at the farmer's market, it also means fewer business customers.
We cater to a lot of restaurants. We sell microgreens to them. And they're slowing down. So that's where, you know, the anxiety level has come up a little bit.
There are also some other changes, Steve, I should mention. The city of LA is taking measures to make sure landlords don't evict tenants for a lack of paying rent because of the financial hardship that might be caused by COVID-19.
I know the city of Santa Monica actually passed an ordinance. So, a lot of folks thinking about that right now as well. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb reporting on coronavirus, COVID-19 all across Southern California. Benjamin, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
So far, 94 reported cases of COVID-19 in Los Angeles County as of last check with the LA County Public Health Department, that coming just about 45 minutes ago from them. By the way, public health officials in the Bay Area have ordered a shelter-in-place directive in an effort to slow the spread of the virus. It covers six counties in the Bay Area, including the cities of San Francisco and Oakland. That's a shelter-in-place. Only go out if you have to. Coming up, we're learning a lot about a global pandemic. How are children learning without being in school? A teacher and a superintendent. Next on Greater LA.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis on this Monday. Today, hundreds of thousands of LA Unified students are staying home as the district has closed now all of its schools for at least the next 2 weeks. Teachers are being asked by the district to create online lessons for their students. But a lot of challenges come with this new uncharted territory. Many students and parents are unsure of how to navigate at-home learning. There are concerns about the resources that students will lose that they normally get at school. Joining me now to talk about this from the teacher's perspective is Christy Collette. She teaches third grade at Newcastle Elementary School in Reseda, part of LAUSD. Christy, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
I know on Friday last week, the district abruptly canceled classes midway through the day, and I know that that caused a lot of confusion. Walk us through how you got the news and what you were tasked with doing on the final day of classes for a while.
They had mentioned to us on Thursday that we should start preparing packets for the kids.
So you got a bit of a head start.
At our school, we did, but I know a lot of other schools did not.
I would suspect just in the past couple of weeks, this has ramped up, right? I mean, it seems like we went from, you know, a slow burn, a low burn for a couple of weeks. We saw what was happening in China. Then we saw that it was spreading. And then obviously Italy blew up and all these other countries in Europe and Southeast Asia. And now here in the United States. So we saw this sort of coming. What was the feeling like in your classroom with the kids there? Were they nervous already? How were they dealing with all of this?
They were there, and it was interesting because they were telling us, you know, to try to keep them calm, but then they're making 75 announcements during the day.
Over the intercom?
Over the intercom, which is not really lending to that.
From what you've heard from the district, how long do you think the closure is going to last? We're saying a couple of weeks, but nobody really knows for sure.
The district is saying 2 weeks as of right now. I personally am not going to be surprised when that gets pushed back till after spring break.
This is not, though, for you guys, a work stoppage. You're going to continue to be paid your salary during this period?
Yes. As far as I know, all LA Unified employees are going to be paid.
And you're charged with putting online instruction for the students. How do you do that? Like, what are you trying to do to prepare for that?
Well, the problem that I personally am facing, and many people in our district are facing, is, you know, we did send home packets of work. At least half of my parents do not speak any English. So it is going to be nearly impossible for them to help their kids complete any of that work. Another problem that we have is about a third of my class, they don't have any devices at home. They don't have internet access at home. So now, like as of this weekend, I know that Spectrum has announced that, you know, all the kids can get free internet, but we're already gone and they do not have their devices at home with them. They're still at school.
Let's rewind a bit because you just said half of your kids, half of the parents of the kids don't speak English. Do you send the curricula home in Spanish as well? Are you being helped with that?
No, the only help we had, our TAs translate our letter that we sent home, but all of the curriculum is sent home in English.
Talk, Christy, a little bit about your school specifically. What are some of the challenges that you're anticipating for parents and students there going forward? I mean, notwithstanding what's happened in the past few days and trying to communicate the messages.
From the parents that I've spoken to, childcare is a big problem. A lot of our parents are still being required to go to work at this point. Free lunches is a big concern. A lot of our school gets school-wide free lunch, meaning every student in our school receives free lunch. So for a lot of kids, it is the only meals they're eating all day.
What about children with disabilities, students who you know, are having a difficult time anyway on a day-to-day basis? How are we helping them?
I have no idea. I know one of our staff members has a preschool student, and they will be receiving some services at their home. But beyond preschool, I don't know that they have anything in place for that.
The libraries are closed. For the most part, museums are closed. That makes life harder for parents, even trying to find activities for kids. I've been seeing a lot online or on Twitter and Facebook about a lot of parents whose children are home from school, all over the country, by the way, who are buying arts and crafts and things like that in order to keep them busy at home. What suggestions do you have for parents trying to keep the kids busy, entertained, learning while they're at home?
Well, there have been so many resources sent to us. There's Mystery Science is a really good resource. They've offered free memberships to all families for the remainder of the school year. And they do provide most of the materials that you would need for those activities online, and they do the whole lesson for you. Khan Academy is always a good one. Chrome Music Lab is a really great activity that the kids can try many different types of musical activities.
Yeah.
There are tons of virtual tours actually available for different zoos, different museums that you could go on. But again, all of these resources are going to be for kids who have access to those devices.
Well, you know, Christy, we're going to have the superintendent, Austin Buettner, on right after this interview. So, I mean, you have his ear. What is it you want to ask him?
My two biggest questions, and I know one of these is many teachers out there, is what effect is this going to have on state testing that's due to be coming up in May and the end of the school year? The second question I have is, are we going to be able to get our students access to their classroom devices so that they will be able to take them home?
Well, we will leave it at that and ask those questions of the superintendent. Christy Collette teaches third grade at Newcastle Elementary in Reseda. Again, now closed for at least the next couple of weeks, along with the rest of the LAUSD system. Christy, thank you and good luck to you.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, let's get to the superintendent now. Austin Buettner oversees the nation's second largest public school district. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So we just heard on the air, Krista Collette is a teacher in Reseda at one of your schools there, and she had the question about state testing. We're going to be out of school for the next couple of weeks. What about state testing going forward? Will those go on as planned?
So our priority in the course of this is threefold. The first has been for continuity of learning. The second has been to make sure that we support students and families. And the third, taking care of our employees. You didn't hear me put testing anywhere in that. I think that this is a different normal, whatever it might be. And we're in discussions with the state, but I think that's all to be determined much further down the road. Right now, we're trying to provide some continuity of learning in students' lives through the work we're doing with PBS, through the work we're doing with their regular classroom educators and supporting them as best we can.
She also had another question about devices that the students use while on campus. Are they able to get those devices home? Because apparently that was an issue.
So we provided, Friday was a day where our whole school community came together to make sure students went home as best prepared as possible. So those who were in school on Friday went home with the device they use. Unfortunately, not every student has a device, which is why we put in place the program with PBS to provide instructional content on three different channels with lesson plans that's state standards aligned. But every student who had a device went home with the device. Those who were absent on Friday, we've made plans to make sure that they can pick that up early this week, today, or the rest of the week.
All right. I want to get into sort of the logistics of because this is, I can't even imagine the Herculean effort this had to be for, 670-some-odd thousand students in your district. Was this your decision, and how did you make the decision?
So we serve the needs of almost 700,000 students, many of whom live in poverty. The closure of any school has real consequence. The closure of all of our schools has even more consequence. We understand that. All along, we had looked to health authorities for guidance as to what is safe and appropriate. And we think the balance shifted to the point where the right thing to do was to close our school facilities. We had put in plan a place for students to continue to learn in a different setting. And so that's what we're doing now, supporting our students, our classroom educators, those who work in schools are working tirelessly in support of that. And I think that's the new normal for a while. So we're going to have to learn to make it better and better and better as we go along. The right thing, based on what health authorities tell us, state and locally, is for school facilities not to be open. And until they can tell us it's safe and appropriate for them to be open, we'll continue on the plan that we put in place.
You guys are saying 2 weeks that this will last. There are a lot of things that are closed for 2 weeks, but we just don't know. Are you sure?
What we said at the outset was, this is for the next 2 weeks, during which time we'll advise you of the path forward. Expectation is it may be longer. We'll see what health authorities have to say. Obviously, CDC's guidance today goes out 2 months. We'll see what we learn in the coming days, in the coming week, and we'll continue to provide that information to the families and students we serve once we know more. So when we close schools, we said they will be closed for the next 2 weeks, more information to come.
You said something at the outset, sir, that struck me, and obviously we know this for a fact, that there are a lot of people in the district who are in poverty. A lot of parents are not able to work from home. They have to go to work to get a paycheck. What do you advise families to do when a parent or a guardian can't stay home with their kids or they don't have childcare?
So one of the prongs I mentioned, the three prongs, continuity of learning, support for students and families and employees. We serve a high-needs population. We serve more than 1 million meals a day. We also serve the students of hospital workers, public safety personnel, first responders. So we're trying to work towards a plan where we might be able to take care of children. We're not there yet. We need the support of the state and the county to know that we can do it in a way that's safe for the adults and the children who are there. We've had an enormous outpouring of volunteers from our own staff. Several thousand people have signed up to work if we can do that. At a minimum, we'll provide nutrition. We've got the Red Cross helping us, so we'll have nutrition that we can provide for students. Continue to do that. We'll be opening those centers on Wednesday. We're working to be able to also take care of children, but we need more guidance and support from state and local authorities before we know we can do that safely.
You said Wednesday. Is that why it's a safety issue, why it's going to take a couple of days to get those centers up?
Yeah, we said when we announced closures on Monday, we said school will be closed beginning Monday. We'll begin to provide nutrition and other supports to the extent we can effective Wednesday. It's taking time to do that safely, to make sure that we've put in place procedures to keep our volunteers and they'll be working at those safe, as well as the students who will come to them safe. So it takes a little bit of time. We want to train people, we want to do it right. This is not the time to launch into something if you haven't thought through all the possible issues that you might face.
Have you announced, by the way, where these resource centers are going to be?
We'll be doing that sometime during the course of the day. My hope is stations like yours and others will help share the word so that people know where to go, what their hours will be, and we'll be providing details on that later today, early tomorrow morning.
You'll also put that on your website, I would imagine, right?
It'll be on our website. People can follow my Twitter at Austin LA Schools, and we will try to use all differing forms of media to make sure people understand where help can be found.
All right, so we've gone through the childcare aspect of it, which is still very dicey, obviously the food and nutrition aspect of it. What about the instruction? Because these kids are going to be out for a couple of weeks. It could be longer than that. They're supposed to be learning something. Will they be learning at home? You mentioned PBS, which is, you know, a vital resource.
We put in place two approaches. We have, for those students where they have a device, they've been trained, their classroom teacher's been trained, continuity of learning on that one-to-one type instruction. We've also put in place this foundation across three channels with PBS because we saw a need. More than a quarter of our families, a quarter of our students don't have access to broadband or the internet at home. So we knew we had to continue to address their learning needs. So we've done that. And if you went on to PBS, you would see for young learners, you'd see prompts, you'd see instruction plan with it. If you watch later today on a different PBS channel, you'd see Reconstruction, America After the Civil War, with questions about what the amendments to the Constitution stated and some of the issues, whether they did or didn't address racial inequality. So real lesson plan. In addition to an opportunity for students to learn, it may supplement their one-to-one. It may be something they do in addition. It may be something they do with a family member, someone who lives next door, as a way to continue to learn, to provide some structure through their life, and maybe in these not normal times, just a little bit of a place that's a respite around learning. So we're really proud of that. It's going to continue to get better and better and better, but I encourage anyone who's listening to tune in, give it a try, and I think they'll find it's not only enjoyable, as much of it on PBS is, but it's real learning. And I'm proud of the team, both in the district and our educators and the team at PBS that came together to provide this. We're hearing other school districts throughout the state are using this, as well as others around the nation. So born and bred in Los Angeles, a model for the nation. It's kind of a nice ring to it.
You know, our teacher, Christy Collette, whom we just spoke with, she mentioned something else to me that struck me, which is that a lot of parents don't speak English at home, and a lot of the instruction going home was just in English. How do you get the instructions to them to where they can communicate, where, you know, the communication is key to all of this? How do you do that?
Sure. So we are language versioning more of it. You'll see in the days to come more language versioning. We're also using Spanish language media, other forms of direct access or indirect communication with families to make sure they understand how they can be part of their students' continuing learning. And what we're asking of all parents now is to become acquainted with what the student brought home, make sure they understand it. If they have any questions, we've set up hotlines for families, we've set up hotlines for educators, that they can all continue to be part of that same school community, because for so many of our students and family members, the school is the foundation. It's the center of their community. We want to provide that support, continue that relationship to the extent we can.
It certainly is for all students. There are students who have special needs as well. Is there a plan for those kids?
Sure. So for our highest, most vulnerable, the moderate to severe, students with a moderate to severe disability, we've closed our special education centers on advice of experts. Most vulnerable students can't be near others with the risk of transmission of a virus like this. There are resource centers that the families continue to have support from, which will provide support for the students. And we've also provided lessons and instruction for all of our students with disabilities, same as we would for any of other of our students.
Austin Buettner, superintendent of LAUSD, the second largest public school system in the United States. Thank you so much, Superintendent. We appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it.
By the way, check out lausd.net for the latest updates and news about the school system. Whether you're a parent or a student, even a teacher, there should be information there about online learning and the resource centers. That is lausd.net. That's it for us today. Tomorrow, well, you know what we're going to be talking about. Let me say this. This is an unusual time. History is full of unusual times. We are resilient as a species. We will get through this with common sense and calm. Calm is the key word here. Life goes on. It will be hard for a lot of people. Do yourself a favor. Do all of us a favor. Find some joy. Find some beauty in your life. I know it's going to be hard being at home, not going to the places that you normally go, or even gathering with lots of people outside. But find the joy. We're going to get through this. We're going to ask the questions necessary of our public officials. We're going to be here with you and for you with as many answers as we can get. We are online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Let us know your thoughts. Share your thoughts with us. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Take care of yourself and have a great day.